Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
We know that. Do you know that?
You bet, you Red Rider.
Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzink's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander. On the other side of the room there is Bunker de France, and I'll use semaphore to contact him today.
Are you sure it's me?
But it looks like you.
Oh, okay.
In Los Angeles, more accurately in Orange County, is that right? But Todd Roberts.
Yes, indeed. Orange County it is today.
The last bastion of conservatism in Southern California.
Apparently so.
Yes, I'm here in Orange County, and it's a lovely weekend in the land of lots of American flags on their lawn.
Today's program is, if you've read the intro on the Facebook page or the Instagram page, let me find it here.
I want to know what we're doing.
Oh. It says, join us for our live stream of today's program at voicesofthewest.net. We'll try to answer the question of what happened to tumbleweeds. Did they just tumble out?
Yeah.
And how about those so-called movie critics who wouldn't know a Western if it hit them in the face? Of course, it's only an opinion, and everyone's got one, kind of like, well, you know. Live stream gets underway at 4 p.m., and podcast ups, usual podcast places.
There you go.
So.
That sounds like a good show. I'll listen in.
I know. I didn't need to use any foul language.
Yeah, not yet. Buk, buk, buk,
buk. So. So anyway, that's what's happening. And now they're all over the damn place.
Goose.
Now they're all over the damn place. Where's my shotgun?
You ever hear I said it's probably not appropriate, but do you ever see a goose make a broad jump?
Now there's a number of ways we can take that.
Well, I'm talking about Olympics. Olympics.
That kind of broad jump.
Okay, yes. Got out of that one.
I know, very quickly, too. All right, do we have some bunkhouse stuff?
Oh, as a matter of fact, coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse is the good, the bad, and the bovine, or flashback fracture, whatever.
Fairy tales.
Okay, well, as you all know by now, we start with today, which is the 11th, and we go back 3 days in time and go forward 3 days in time, but we don't go past today in real time, which means we've lost a lot of time.
Which means we don't know where the hell we are.
Yeah. Anyhow, I'm going to start with April 8, 1892. Gladys Louise Smith was born. She was known professionally as Mary Pickford, Canadian-American. She's an actress and a producer. 5 decades on the big screen, a long career. She was Hollywood's first millionaire by 1960. There's three of her early Westerns. The Renunciation, and that was done in July 19, 1909, ran a whole 11 minutes. God, can you imagine a movie that long?
Wow.
And the second one was The Indian Runner's Romance, and that's an interesting one. That was August 22nd, same year, 1909, another 11-minute one.
Hmm.
Now, the third one was The Hessian Renegades, and that was September 9, 1909. We're on a roll there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's interesting because that has to do with the American Revolution.
Interesting.
So I maintain American Revolution films were Westerns.
Well, yeah, because it wasn't happening in our timeline, anyway.
It was part of the...
My grandma was born in 1892.
She was?
Yep.
Well, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday, grandma. Now, on April 9, 1865, this is one everybody knows. If they don't, they should get rid of their iPads and their computer games.
Go back to school.
Yes. But Confederate General Robert E. Lee surrendered the Army of Northern Virginia to Union General Ulysses S. Grant. That was also, Ulysses was also my granddad's name.
Ah.
And anyhow, at Appomattox Courthouse, ending the American Civil War. Now, if you kids out there didn't know that, you're stupid. Now,
that's April, bunker at voicesofthewest@gmail.com.
Hey, that's my political comment on that. I've given up on the youth of America today. Mm. Now, for the youth of April 10, 1919, I haven't given up on them. Death of Emilio Zapata Salazar. He was a Mexican revolutionary and general, a leader, guerrilla leader. He was assassinated by government forces at Chimesa, Jamaica, Morales. That's the location where they pumped him full of lead. Mm-hmm. And his assassination was a pivotal moment in the history of the Mexican Civil War. Boy, I'm still back in the wrong time period. And the Mexican Revolution. But that was a mess of hornets there. And then April 11th, which is today, but in this case in 1794, Edward Everett, he was born. He was a politician, a Unitarian pastor. He was an educator, a diplomat, an orator from Massachusetts. He was a Whig, served as a U.S. representative, as a senator, was 15th governor of Massachusetts. He was minister to Great Britain, U.S. Secretary of State, and served as teacher and president of Harvard University. Now, there's a guy, I confess, I had not heard of him until I had come across him.
Well, his later namesake is Edward Everett Horton, the British actor.
Yes, of course. But you know, that's just the thing.
Well, I don't know, maybe he wasn't British.
This is all part of of the ignorance that we have immersed ourselves in, because we don't even go out and look for this kind of stuff.
No, you know, I see people walking across, and when I'm driving around, they're in the crosswalk crossing the street, and they're all tapping on their palms, because that's where their damn phone is.
And they don't even know what color the light is.
Yeah, no, they're not even paying attention to what's going on. Whatever's on that phone is
run over
much more important.
Okay, April 12, 1872, Oscar Raymond, he's called Ray Knight. This guy fascinates me now. This is another guy I may have to dig into him. He was born in 1872. He was a gold and silver miner, a cattle rancher, large-scale farmer, a bank executive, an industrialist, a rodeo railroad executive, a rodeo producer, a rodeo stock contractor, a rodeo chap, and he was one of the wealthiest cattle ranchers in the world at that time.
I'll bet.
Now, that's what I call an underachiever. And April 13, 1743, now, this is something everybody ought to know. Thomas Jefferson was born.
Hmm.
Now, he was the third president of the United States. You kids ought to know that. It's going to be on the test.
And he's on what piece of currency?
Yes. I don't know. It's a currency.
A nickel.
Is it current? Anyhow, he was the primary author of the Declaration of Independence. Now, what that means for you kiddies out there, primary, that means he did a whole bunch of homework and studying and serious writing. He was a leading proponent of democracy, not democratic politics, but democracy. He was a republicanism. He was for natural rights. And he ranks among the top of all of the U.S. presidents. He even got a mountain with his picture, a face on it.
Yeah, he and John Adams were very close friends, did not agree on much politically, but they were very close friends. They used to write one another, and they both died on July 4, 1826.
And think about it. They were able to work together in Washington, you know, without all the partisan bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll finish this up here, because I know by now everybody's reaching for the dial to turn us off. April 14, 1935. See, we're getting a little more modern here. That was Black Sunday. Now, you're asking yourself, that a movie with a giant dirigible and going to blow up a football stadium? No, it was not, you dummies. It was the most severe dust storm of the Dust Bowl. It ravaged the U.S. Midwest, causing immense economic and agricultural damage. It was so bad that people driving couldn't drive because they couldn't see out their windshield. People died in it, suffocated. It was a bad mama.
Almost like the haboobs we get on Interstate 10 between Phoenix and Tucson.
Yeah, Phoenix is like, you swear you're in Saudi Arabia.
I know.
Of course,
I know.
Maybe you are, because never mind. I'm
hard to say.
Yeah, I'm getting
all right.
Too crazy.
Before we get to what we're here all about, we got a very nice email from Jerry England, whom we talked about last week. On last week's program, and he writes to us that he wanted to thank us again from the bottom of his heart for having him on the podcast last week. He says, it was an honor to sit and listen to you fellers and talk about the Old West, mounted shooting, canoeing, furniture making, and a few of the trails I've ridden in my time. Well, he was visiting at home, and he mentioned his old friend Roger Miller. He says, one of the best cowboys and finest men I've ever known. After our meetup, I had a part of mine help me put together Roger's story into a pure Charlie Russell-style tale, the kind you might hear around a night herd fire. And he thought us boys might enjoy it and maybe even share it with the listeners. Should we share it with the listeners?
I think we ought to.
Okay.
Broadcast is the whole wide world.
It's short, it's straight, and from his heart, in the old heart of the old cow country. Here it is, the cowboy who cashed in a winner. Jerry writes, now I ain't one to go preaching about heroes, but every now and then the Lord drops a real article into this old cow country, and when he does, you best take notice. Fellers like that don't come along every roundup. His name was Roger Miller, and he was born in Azusa, California, back when that town still smelled more of orange blossoms than pavement. But Roger never had much use for towns. By the time he was barely old enough to fork a saddle, he was riding for the Vail and Vickers outfit on Santa Rosa Island, just off Santa Barbara. We know that Vail Ranch.
That's the
Empire. Yep, yeah. That was real cow work, wild stuff, the kind the old California vaqueros still remembered. Later, he punched cows on the Rancho California down by Temecula. He always said the prettiest thing God ever made was a wet, wobbly, newborn calf standing in the morning sun. I reckon he was right. But Roger wasn't the kind of guy to stay in one brand forever. Time came when he traded his chaps for a paintbrush and a set of silver casting tools. He could carve wood that looked like it grew that way, paint a scene so real you could smell the dust, and turn out cast silver cowboy jewelry that made a man's belt look like it belonged on a king. He made his living doing what he liked, just like old Charlie Russell used to say, and he figured out that made him lucky from the start. I met him one fine day in the late 80s at a cowboy antique show in Phoenix. We shook hands, and it was like two old saddle pals who'd been separated by a stampede. Same dry humor, same love of good horses, same notion that life was too short to waste on anything that didn't smell like leather or sage. Over the next few years, we rode together in Arizona, New Mexico, Wyoming, camped at a gentleman's spread near Tucson, and raised more dust than the law allowed. One year, Roger sold his place in Glorieta, New Mexico. Government wanted it for some Civil War battlefield. And he suddenly was cowboy rich. Pardon me. Did he buy himself a mansion? No, sir. He bought a new pickup, headed straight for Cody, Wyoming, and picked up a little 8-acre slice of heaven on the edge of town. Dug a well, threw up a corral, parked a 40-foot horse trailer for a bunkhouse, and started building his cabin with his own hands. I helped him set the foundation and floor one summer. Wasn't fancy, but it was the perfect cowboy artist's camp. That's when he talked me into buying a horse. I drove up to the North Fork of the Shoshone with a fifth of good Canadian whiskey, found a horse trader, and sized up the string of broom tails. Roger pointed at a sorrel paint mare and said, I like that one. I tried her, liked her, and bought her on the spot. We rode home. built fence till her hands bled, turned her out with Roger's little Mustang star in knee-deep alfalfa. Roger was my teacher in those days. He'd been a real brush-popping cowboy when I was still reading about him in books. One morning while I was kicking manure in the pasture, he looked over and drawled, "The most dangerous horse in the world is somebody's pet." I laughed at the time. A few years later, my own bomb-proof gelding pinned me against a fence, trying to get away from the alpha mare, and I heard Roger's voice floating down from somewhere up above. I still smile when I think about it. Another time we were riding high in the Rockies with some outfit. A feller named Josh had ground-tied his pack mule while he worked on a squaw hitch. That mule decided he'd have had enough of polite society and lit out for a 500-foot cliff, bucking and rattling pans like a runaway freight. Josh was hanging on to the lash rope for dear life. Roger never said a word, just spurred that little Mustang star and headed the mule off before it could commit suicide. I tried to follow on a string horse that didn't cotton to spurs and got my own private rodeo. Roger just grinned, handed the lead rope back to Josh and said, "Never trust a ground-tied pack mule." We laughed about it all the way to the cantina that night. Pardon me. Roger kept a little sign in his cabin. It had Charlie Russell's silhouette on it and the words, "Any man that can make a living doing what he likes is lucky, and I am that. Anytime I cash in now, I win." He lived by that, and when he knew the final gather was coming, he had some, pardon me, he had some elk, little elk skin medicine bags made up. Each one held a pinch of sweet grass and a pellet of his own ashes, fastened with one of his silver conchos. He sent one to me. No note, just the bag. I knew what it meant. My old pard wasn't really gone. He was just riding a different range, close enough to keep an eye on things. Roger crossed into the Great Divide on September of 98. Same year, the last cows left Santa Rosa Island and the old Vail and Vickers cowboys were turned loose. Two good outfits gone in the same season. But the memories didn't go nowhere. So here's to Roger Miller, working cowboy, fine artist, silver caster, and the best pard a man could ask for. He punched cows on islands and painted pictures of the life he loved. Built a cabin in Cody with his own hands, rode good horses, told better stories, and left a little piece of himself in an elk skin bag so the rest of us would never ride alone. Excuse me. Anytime he cashed in, boys, he won. And there you be.
That was, thank you very so much. That was awesome. That was fantastic.
Todd, what do you think?
I think it was great. And Jerry is articulate. He's just as good a writer as he is articulate.
Yeah.
I spent the day with him on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And had coffee, and he showed me his furniture and his house and his office. And
cool.
He's just a splendid, splendid person.
Well, you know, just listening to that, you know, he was writing about the real deal, and he is the real deal.
He's so sincere.
Yeah, well, it's you find a true cowboy, and you find the truth.
All right, we got to do our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. We're not talking about much of anything, but we'll be back with it after this.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms. But you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Why did you do it, son?
I took the money, you got it back. It's as simple as that. Looked like easy pickings.
A lot of guys thought that, and everyone wound up with a bullet in their hide.
Not all of them, Red Top.
Well, you whippersnapper.
Take it easy, Red.
This is the Voices of the West.
I'm going back over the mountains, through the fields of golden May. Every scene that I pass brings me near. My dear old home, I know I'll soon be in before this train is gone a mile a minute. Boy, what a treat. Everybody will be there to greet that Rocky Mountain Express.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you, and the Pals of the Golden West there, and that Rocky Mountain Train. That's the song that they keep singing in California with the boondoggle of that fast rail between L.A. and San Francisco. Right, Todd?
Yeah, you mean the crazy train?
Yeah.
That's Governor Newsom at his best. They've spent. It was supposed to cost $10 billion, and then it went to $20 billion almost immediately, and now it's above $104 billion. They haven't laid 1 mile of track, and he can't tell you where any of the money went.
Elsewhere.
And I've got a round-trip ticket on it.
You booked early, did you?
Yeah. You know what that line is called there? That train line is called Bunker.
It's called
Fast Train to Nowhere.
What's it called?
Train to Nowhere.
Train to Nowhere. Yeah.
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 Train from nowhere to nowhere.
And now they've shortened it. It was supposed to be from Sacramento to L.A., and now they're going to do it from Merced to Bakersfield. And I'll tell you there, that route is selling out. There's a lot of people going from Merced to Bakersfield.
And so much stuff to look at.
What happened to the L.A. to Las Vegas train?
That was one of the main people who got that started was the great Merv Adelson, who started Lorimar. My dad was the president of the music division, Ella. He put in a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, and lost it all.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so we got the train thing figured out. Now we're going to try and figure out this tale about what the hell happened to tumbleweeds. You used to see them on Westerns all over the place.
Yeah.
And in Tucson, anyway, I don't know about...
I can remember my dad had a place on the south side.
Yeah.
And God, they were everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
And now you can't find a single one.
And I grew up on the east side of Tucson, and they were all over the place around here, too.
Good.
And I don't know about Los Angeles. I don't remember ever seeing them in Los Angeles.
So you had to go in the back lot.
In the back lot for them. It's in the van. And just pull out a couple.
Release the tumbleweed.
Yeah. So, you know, okay, what is a tumbleweed? It actually is a plant called Russian thistle.
Thistle.
And it was imported, well, not necessarily imported, but
it found its way. It was hiding in a, yeah. in a shipment of flaxseed to the Midwest.
Yeah, it found its way into the country that way. And
illegal alien.
The original illegal alien. And it just went. It just they went all over the place.
Wherever they could tumble.
I truly don't know.
A trail of seeds.
Yeah, I don't know how long the plant lasts, but they're gone.
You know, I remember when I was a kid, people would go out and look for the perfect tumbleweed for Christmas and then spray paint it either silver
or gold.
Green.
Or gold.
Little Christmas decorations on it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Well, the one thing about tumbleweeds that most people don't understand is that you don't want to run over them because they will mess up your undercarriage.
Oh.
They will never get it out of there.
Nope.
It'll be in your radiator forever.
And you'll be spreading the seeds too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like the birds did when they picked up those seeds and flew all over the place and dropped them.
when you gotta go, you gotta go. there goes another seed.
Whether it's a tumbleweed seed or an Australian pine or whatever, it's gotta go now. All right. What else?
I can remember driving from Ruidoso up to Roswell. When I was a kid, as a passenger, and at that time there was a long fence along there, and on the north side of the fence, and this is weird, you would see literally 40, 50, 60 pronghorn, and on the fences you'd see hawks and coyotes. I mean, it was kind of like the Safari Club mm-hmm. of New Mexico.
Yeah.
All these dead varmints on there, but at certain times of year, you'd drive up there, and you couldn't see that because it would just be a solid wall of tumbleweeds all the way to Roswell, stuck to the fence.
So, when you were doing pictures, Bunker, did they import tumbleweeds when they had seen call for it?
You know, I'll tell you, I look back on my career now, and I realize
you were a tumbleweed.
My career was incomplete because I never worked a movie with a tumbleweed.
Well.
I feel bad now.
All right, we got to go out and find one and give it to Bunker.
Okay.
I don't know what the hell he'll do with it, but, you know, hey.
I'll drift along like a tumbleweed.
Well, you know, Bunker, hang it from the ceiling and turn it into a chandelier.
My love to the ground.
Yeah, hang it from your ceiling and turn it into a chandelier.
I could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put a few ornaments on there. Give you a dream catcher, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Todd Roberts, what have you got for us?
You're on.
Well, you know, it's the tumbleweed, like the saguaro cactus, or the cholla, or the yucca, is just this one of the great symbols of the Western United States.
Yeah, yeah.
It's iconic. It's somewhat of a nuisance, but you know, I don't think you could. You can have, I don't think you can get Western that one. If we remember the film, Miss Conniger with Sam Elliott, the great L'Amour novel, Sam Elliott.
Oh, yeah.
Rock, they build a whole backstory of the woman Catherine Ross plays, Mrs. Teal, who's a widow. She doesn't know it. She thinks it may be. And she's so lonely on this remote outpost of a ranch, she starts writing little love notes to just, you know, the heavens, as it were. And she ties them to tumbleweeds, and they roll around the Southwest, and he starts coming upon them. And he starts pulling them out and reading them. And it's kind of like her putting the message in the bottle and it floats across the ocean. It's a, you know, he likes her because he discovers her little rancho with her two kids and the man's gone. And he likes her and she kind of likes him, but she's very reserved and respectful of her husband, so she's not going to do anything. But then separately, they're both in love with each other who don't know each other because they don't know that the other one is reading the notes and that she's writing.
Yeah.
So it's a whole story built around that. And they, of course, the main story.
It's a brilliant touch. Brilliant.
You know, when you sign on with a man, you ride, you know, you ride with him.
Yep.
Keeping your word.
Yeah.
All that. And of course, the great Buck Taylor is in it.
Ah.
Yes.
Yeah, I just realized that's why there are no tumbleweeds. Sam Elliott gathered them all up looking for notes.
And he's got them under his nose.
He's in his mustache.
And don't forget the great Barry Corbin is in it.
Yeah.
As is Ken Curtis.
Yeah.
He's so good. So good.
That's one of those that flies under the radar, right?
You know, another thing we...
Well, they made it together. They made it, and they got on Larry King and got him to interview them, and it was they really did a big marketing push for it, cool. And it was a very, very popular show. It was on TNT, you know. Uh-huh. It was at the beginning of Ted Turner.
Yeah.
Setting out the welcome sign as there for a nice string of time.
Yeah.
He said, you know, bring me any Western you make and I'll put it on my network.
Yep.
And the highest rated Western ever made for TV is the one that he did with Quigley, Tom Selleck.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Monty Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's the only time. TNT was number one for the month, the entire month. It's also they premiered it on a Friday night, a Saturday night, and a Sunday night. They screened it three nights in a row. All three of those nights, they were number one. But they averaged number one for the entire month. It's the only time in history of TNT it ever happened.
Are they still in business?
Sure they are.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, they play way too much basketball or whatever they play.
Yeah, I don't
like to say you saw
owned
it,
so he owned the Atlanta Hawks and he owned the Atlanta Braves at one time.
You
realize that the two great icons of Westerns is the tumbleweed and the saguaro cactus in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, I've never seen a saguaro cactus in Texas.
Nobody has, except in the movies.
Yeah, well, okay.
They're only
hey,
from
they've even been in Mexican Italy.
Border all the way up to south of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're in this, you know, down into Mexico in the northern, mm-hmm. shall we say, third of Sonora. That's the only place in the whole world they live.
Well, actually, we've seen one up in Monument Valley, too.
Oh, yeah.
But that one was waving, so I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, that was my darling Clementine had them. But, you know, that's the other thing, too. There was a great article several years back in Arizona Highways, and it was the northernmost saguaro in Arizona, but they wouldn't tell you where it was.
Right.
You know, to protect it.
Yeah, but really. There's a song... and I'll have to find it and play it sometime. There's a song about this guy who went out into the desert drunk, big time drunk.
Oh, yeah.
And his shotgun, and he's shooting up cactus. Never a good thing to do. But the gist of the song is he picked the wrong saguaro to mess with, and it killed him.
Yeah, that actually happened up by Apache Junction.
It did, yes, it actually happened. And there's a number of tunes out there that cover that. Austin City Lounge Lizards are one of the groups that covered that. Okay, let's take our next commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, and then I'm going to get on my high horse and hopefully not fall off. And bring it to the movie critics.
B2C.
Here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts. We'll be right back.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ole Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
It's from Manolito's in jail in Nogales.
I had heard he was wanted there for several charges. My son does not do things in half measures.
That's the best, and they're going to execute him. They have a firing wall set up.
I suppose I always knew he would end up like that.
This is the Voices of the West.
Back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles. And by the way, we're coming to you from Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, is that where we are?
I think so. Oh. Last time I looked at the map, anyway. Anywho, we're back with the program, and
that's a warning.
It's a warning. As I said in the write-up, we're going to take some movie critics to task. One of the ones I watched last night, it was called The Fighting Texan. It's a 1937 film, stars Ken Maynard, Bill Cassidy, Frank LaRue, Bud Buster.
Ooh.
Who else we have in there? Bob Woodward was in there. Art Dillard was in there.
Ooh.
Lots of your famous henchmen in there. But anyway, the gist of this movie is that let me find it here. A rancher finds that his stock of horses is mysteriously being depleted and discovers that a ranch near him has had a sudden upsurge in its horse population.
Flourishing.
Yeah, flourishing. Now, I think the reviewer on this one, this is from IMDb, this reviewer says...
Oh, no wonder.
Yeah, well...
They have some of the worst.
This reviewer says, a totally undistinguished B-Western. And they give it 3 out of 10. The person tells us that the film company was Ambassador, and it's a Poverty Row outfit. Sure, no problem. The film contains only 4 or 5 indoor scenes. Few sets were thus built, which kept the cost of the film low. The entire cast deliver their lines in monotone, and during the first half of the film, there are way too many times when the characters stand around talking. I don't know what they're supposed to be doing, but okay.
Supposed to be rustling tumbleweeds.
I guess. All the attempts at humor misfire. The action sequences become more frequent and lengthier as the movie progresses, and up the excitement level considerably. Film climaxes in a shootout gun battle, which takes place in the midst of some truly impressive scenery. That's the best part of this movie. Person says, I do not recommend viewing The Fighting Texan. Instead, you should probably like viewing an old Republic Western movie. Yeah, Republic had a budget. Ambassador did not. Grand National Pictures did not. But that's not why we watch them.
No. You know, again, it's I think too many critics write for themselves and not for the film. And it's like they want to show how clever or how smart or how, you know, just how superior they are. And again, you know, this guy was probably writing that review to in this modern time period,
yeah,
and not back when the movie was made.
Well, yeah, it was a 2-year old review.
Yeah, and so, you know, the guy probably has never seen a real horse.
Mm.
He thinks cows come in a plastic wrap at the butcher shop, and you know, these guys you review what you know.
Yeah.
Don't review stuff that you because I'm a critic. I'm an expert. You're not.
Yeah, I know. Well, the stunt scenes in there were most excellent. Now, Kermit Maynard was a stunt man in a lot of movies. I know he did his own stunts.
He doubled his brother.
And he doubled his brother, Ken Maynard. Kermit was a better horseman than Ken, I think. A better stuntman than Ken, I think. And I think a better personality than Ken.
Well, much nicer to horses, that's for sure.
Yeah. And so, the action scenes are excellent. There are stunts in there where Ken does, he jumps onto the horse, the back of the horse. I mean, you know, like it's...
What, a Cooper
like it's,
mount?
Yeah, like it's nothing. He does another one running to the horses facing him on the side there, and he runs and gets his foot into the stirrup and climbs over. I mean,
swings up.
You know, that.
Yeah, you know,
I can't do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I
you probably I could 40 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I hope I am. Flashback. Yeah. And you know, this again, you know, these guys, you know, they, you know, I don't know how they can appreciate a film when they don't even really appreciate the time period it was made in or for the audience it was made for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, so that was from 37. Now, last night, we also watched a pretty decent movie called The Five, or maybe just Five. It's directed by Travis Mills, who we know quite well. Written by Travis, stars his pal John Mars, Todd South, and Tom Dracht. And basically, the five outlaws hide out after robbing a bank. The longer they wait for the woman with their share of the money to arrive, the more suspicion starts to grow. When a gun goes missing, everyone is left to ask, who's the traitor?
Hmm.
Well, you know, okay,
gotta have a traitor.
That has some good stuff. One person wrote that Thoughtful Cowboy just watched the film on Amazon Prime, and while it's not any great shakes in historical accuracy over firearms or the period dress, it has a good plot and held me enough to watch it all the way through. Those who shamefully slated it on such points really do need to get a life. There's a decent shootout, action interspersed the film without the usual profanity that litters most latter-day revisionist cowboy movies these days. Now, the historical accuracy over the firearms. Our friend John Mars was the armorer.
Mm-hmm.
John's a former police officer.
Firearms instructor.
He knows his firearms, you know. And I don't think he would have brought in a flintlock, yeah, you know, or a Thompson machine gun, because that wasn't period perfect.
A bazooka. Yeah.
Or a bazooka.
Yeah.
As far as the costuming...
Well, let's one more thing about that. They were talking about the guns not fitting the period, and from what I've gathered from what you said, the period isn't even established.
That's
so
true.
How can the guy make a statement like that?
Some of the guns were Colts, and I forget what some of the others were, and then...
Schofield?
The Schofield was what John Mars had. And, I mean, you know, the costuming was excellent. Yeah. One of the bad guys, one of the robbers, he's a where am I going with it? He is a young fella, and what happens is he's got this shirt that's got a couple of tears on the arms. Well, those are bullet holes from the last time.
Well, you know, that's another thing. That's what always been one of my pet peeves, is wardrobe.
Yeah.
A lot of times you're looking at it, and they've aged it, and they've, you know, they got the dirt on it. But you look at it, and underneath all that dirt is a brand new shirt. And you can tell it's a brand new shirt. My biggest pet peeve nowadays is the hats. They'll age those hats just beautifully. But it still has that crispness of a brand new hat.
In one of the scenes when they go into the cabin that they're waiting for this woman to appear, they take off their hats, and everybody's got that line across the forehead.
Oh, the tan line.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's got that. Now,
That's authentic.
I thought so.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, you know, you take one of those old-time cowboys, he takes his shirt off and his long johns. From the wrist up, he's got the color of a fish belly, just farmer, like his forehead.
It's a farmer tan.
Yeah.
Farmer tan, that's what it is. Let's see, what else? Oh, here's another one that says, utter trash. I would like to know who gave this a rating over one star. Decent story, horrible acting and directing. I've seen better grade school plays. I understand the actors just want to get paid, but my shoes have better talent and personality, and they're never on the screen. Costume selection was horrible. I mean, who wore freshly pressed trousers and shirts back then? Nobody did, and the shirts weren't pressed, and neither were the trousers. Armorer should just go hang himself because he used a pistol that was only 20 years from being made. The rigs they carried the guns in were nothing but Hollywood manufactured fables. I can go on and on. Most everybody was using a cross-draw holster, which is period.
On a belt and not on a rig.
Yeah. Yeah, which was period correct.
They don't even know the history of this stuff.
Not because it's a Travis Mills film. Hey, everybody can make a bad one every now and then, all right? But this one was pretty damn good.
Okay, question. On a grade of 5-star, thumbs up, what would you give it?
I give it a 3.5.
And a thumbs up.
And a thumbs up, yeah.
Yeah, here you go.
You know, I mean, it wasn't great. But it was really good.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the other thing. You know, we've all seen movies, and, you know, especially today in Hollywood, you know, they got a movie with a budget of $300 million, and you go in there and you look at it, and it's all technical stuff, and no story, no heart, but, you know, just gimmickry and flash and bang, loud, big explosions, and that's what people think. That's what they think is a good movie.
And this one says, actors, we don't need no stinking actors. They give it a 2 out of 10. This is a drama western, not an action western. It's all talky, 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 no shootouts. There's one scene of action for roughly 2 minutes, about 3/4 of the way through the film, then more drama just after it. The problem with a drama western is you have to actually cast a bunch of people that can act and convey emotion. No one in this film has the ability to effectively portray drama on screen. It's one thing to cast a bunch of novice actors for more action-based roles. It doesn't take much acting skill to run, ride a horse, pretend to shoot, etc.
Bullshit!
But to talk in an effort to convey some sort of emotion, they kind of need to be able to actually act. No one in this cast can act, and it's all drama.
You know, first of
like
all,
a bunch of crap.
First of all, when you started, that made me think of the Oxbow incident.
Yeah.
You know, where's the action in that? It's all tension, and you know, again, you got these guys that are working on these independent westerns. These aren't Hollywood SAG people. These are guys that are trying to get started in the business, trying to get an SAG card, and the guy mentions money. All of these guys are working just They're working for free just for the experience.
Just to work. And, you know,
and it's a learning experience. It's a growing experience.
And the outfit that produced this movie had some bucks, obviously.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a Travis Mills produced. I mean, he produced it, but the company threw in some bucks.
Yeah.
All right. So, Todd, you got anything you want to throw in there?
Well, you know, I think it's important to remember, as Theodore Roosevelt said about the critic, that, critics are those timid souls who truly never known to live, to what it is to live, and sit as far away from the action as possible. And as Hemingway said, you could always tell the difference between the bullfighting critics is the ones who were, shall we say, sissies, whereas as all the way up to the top of the stadium was far away from the bull jumping the wall and getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing here. You know, you're talking to my dad used to say about critics, yeah, and when was his last hit?
There you go.
When was he ever acted? Yeah.
You know, and I would just point out that, a critic who I liked a lot, but didn't really like Westerns all that much, was Rex Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he could be very critical and put his nose down at things. And then he once interviewed Bette Midler while she was on the toilet. And I thought, well,
I like
you're going to be critical of Westerns?
Uh-huh.
You interviewed someone on a toilet. You couldn't wait for them to come out of the bathroom? And we go back to The Wild Bunch. I always remember the great
Bosley Crowther?
Max Canby, the great film critic, who said it was a masterpiece and something that, truly for all time. And then in the same period of time, on a probably a different newspaper, but both in New York, you had Pauline Kael and Judith Crist saying that this film was an abomination to mankind. And, the producer who greenlit it should go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And today we look back on that film, and it is considered by many as one of the greatest Westerns, if not one of the greatest films ever made.
Yep. All right, we got to do our final commercial break here. We're over on that. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you. It's Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. We're getting down on those movie critics because they don't know Jack. We'll be back.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ed.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Kenny State winner, and no way that nobody's gonna leave this town. Hell, I was born here, and I was raised here, and that gun, I'm gonna die here. And no sidewinding, bushwhacking, hornswoggling, crocker is gonna roll my biscuit cutter.
Now, who can argue with that?
This is the Voices of the West.
In our cowboy band, he plays the best bass in the land. He plays it on and off the beat. He plays it hot and he plays it sweet. He plays the full pedal boogie. He goes to town with the solid beat. That's so real low down.
We're back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker DeFrance, and Todd Roberts with you. Pee Wee King there.
That Gabby Hayes rant?
No, what about the Gabby Hayes? I have the Gabby Hayes.
I know, the one we just listened to?
No, that wasn't Gabby Hayes.
That wasn't?
No.
But it sounded like no, I thought it was that... Todd for a minute.
This is Elbridge.
No, that was from Blazing Saddles.
Oh, he was impersonating Gabby Hayes. Okay, I don't know.
Anyway.
You did a good job.
Oh, I wanted to mention, if you enjoy some of this music that we use here, it's all public domain music. You can find it very easy.
Yeah.
And you can find it easier if you go to our website, voicesofthewest.net, and when we're not on the... on the stream there, you can listen to all kinds of great cowboy music.
It's right there on the top right-hand corner.
It's called a roundup, and yeah. By golly, that's what we do. All right, any last-minute thoughts here?
Well, I've got two things, but I don't think we have enough time for them, so heck with them.
All right, you can do one.
Okay, well, let's just do a quick Bronco Billy sentence.
Yeah.
This was a silent from February 13th, 1915. It ran 17 minutes, black and white, short. It was produced by SNA and distributed by General Film. And the director, the producer, and the screenplay was all Gilbert and Bronco Billy Anderson. And this is an interesting little film because he's a bad guy. I mean, he gets redemption, but not in the typical fashion here. He's on the run from the law. He's held up a stagecoach. And he hides out in his house with a young girl and her grandfather. Well, he tries to molest the young girl, and before he can do that, the posse shows up. He threatens to shoot the grandpa if the girl doesn't tell him he went that away. So the posse goes that away, and she comes back in, and he leaves. Well, she grabs a Winchester, takes a pot shot at him, and grazes his head. He's wounded, not mortally, wow. But seriously. He hides the loot in an old tree stump, and staggers into town. He's taken in by an elderly couple. He's a preacher and his wife, and they nurse him back to health, and he spends some time with him. But while he's there, he sees how they're living, and he hears the sermons and everything. Mm-hmm. And they're not trying to convert mm-hmm. him.
Right, right.
But he gets converted to the point that he gets the money out of the stump, goes in and gives it back to the sheriff, goes to prison, and the last scene in the movie, he's preaching. Every morning he does the early morning Bible study, and one of the guards come in, they take him to the warden, and the warden says, "You've been a good man, we're turning you loose."
Wow. Good stuff, good stuff. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Todd, do you have anything very brief?
Well, I think that, you know, unfortunately people who don't understand things are intimidated by them or allow themselves to be intimidated, and therefore, you know, that is part of the reason you have so many in Hollywood and so many of those in the who are critics who don't understand Westerns and therefore beguile them.
Uh-huh.
And it's unfortunate because it really says much more about them than it does the Western film.
It certainly does. That's a very good note to close on. That's it for this edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker DeFrance, and Todd Roberts with you. Talk at you next time.
78, 79, 80 O's, you incompetent critics.
So long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.